want to thank, welcome all of you, especially our guests this morning. And the message we're going to talk about this morning, or we're going to share with you, is going to be another in a series that I've been presenting, I Believe. I once did not believe. And upon examining the evidence and searching to find God's will, I come to believe. So this morning I want to share with you another one of those reasons of why I believe. I believe because... get back here. Because of the things that God has made. God's creation. I see the hand of God in His creation. Romans 1:18-20, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hinder the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which is known of God is manifest in them, for God manifested it unto them. For the invisible things of Him since the creation of the world are clearly seen, being perceived through the things that are made, even His everlasting power and divinity." And so I believe because of the things that God has made, what He has revealed, how He has revealed Himself in His creation. This morning we're going to talk about some issues that have been a major point that the devil has used to try to subjugate Christians to the non-believing concepts of the world, that they may be without excuse. In Colossians 1:16 says, "For by Him were all things created, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by Him and for Him." 1 Chronicles 16:11-12 says, "Seek the Lord and His strength, seek His face continually. Remember His marvelous works that He hath done, His wonders and the judgments of His mouth." I want to look at the marvel of life itself. It astounds me. I want to be a scientist, and I studied these things extensively. I wanted to know all of the creation. I was especially interested in the in biology, those things. And the more I looked into the life itself, the more I was astounded by it and the complexity of it, and doubted the idea that it all happened by some sort of great accident or series of accidents. When we look at life, the simplest organism is made up of thousands of different proteins. These must be arranged in a workable code, energized, survive, and reproduce in order to have life. One cell is like a huge metropolis, like a huge city with all of the different things that are done. One cell is like that. And the human body can have as many as 100 trillion cells, and all working together to design structures, genetic energy, guard against invasion, transport things, make food, dispose waste, and communicate with each other. But all of this has to coordinate together in order for the human body to survive and do the things it has. This thing is just utterly astounding. It just boggles the mind the more you look into it. And we still have not begun to plumb the depths of the complexity of this thing. And we are told that all of this just happened. God had no part in it. It was just an series of coincidences, accidents of nature. And I have a serious question about that. the beginning of life itself. How did it begin? I mean, you got to start off someplace. It's not just well, it evolved. How did it begin? You're talking about a huge, a phenomenal act of just getting one cell to function, just one little piece of life. We're not talking about just a couple of little atoms getting together and they started producing other atoms and then they developed. You're talking about for life, you have a series of things that have to take place in order for that life to exist and function. Shall we say that this all happened by spontaneous generation? You know, for centuries it was recognized, or for many years at least, it was recognized that life was not spontaneous. In 1800s, I believe it was, or 1800s, this was demonstrated, that life cannot come spontaneously. And yet we're told that that's where we all came from. That's the latest thing. All life is complex. There is no simple life anymore. They recognize that. Let's just look at the probabilities involved. If you take 10 pennies and you mark on them from 1 to 10, and you pull the first one out of your pocket, put them in your pocket, pull out the first one, the chances of taking number 1 out is 1 chance in 10. There's 10 of them in there, 1 chance in 10. The chances of taking number 2 out, having number 2 come up, would be 1 chance in 100. It would be actually 10, but what happens is you have to multiply it by the number that you began with. And if you take, in order for you to take out in one series all of those 10 pennies in a row without any mistakes, comes to some 1 chance in 10 billion. That's just pulling 10 pennies out of your pocket. The probability factor is enormous. So what then is the probability factor involved in all of these billions of things that have to take place in order for life to come down to us and today as it is by accident, by chance? Psalms 139:14 says, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. We are indeed wondrously made. Dr. Michael Denton, microbiologist, in the book Evolution, A Theory in Crisis, says, the complexity of the simplest known type of cell is so great that it is impossible to accept that such an object could have been thrown together suddenly by some kind of freakish, vastly improbable event. Such an occurrence would be indistinguishable from a mirror. Let's take a look at the evidence of design in the creation of God. First place, let's think about this fact. Greater complexity, the greater the complexity, the less likely it came about by a random chance. Now that's a thing that we know in life. In all of our life, we have experienced that. We don't just figure that things came about by some kind of accident. If it's complex, now simple things may happen. In other words, you might have flipped the coin and twice in a row you get heads. But complex things have to take design. It's not done on a complex basis over a long period of time. It has to be, those things tend to break down, as well as you have some coincidences, yes. And they also break down, though. And so, to have anything really complex, it is not done by accident. If I go out into the hills someplace and I run into some little flint things that have the shape that we have here, do I conclude that these happen by accident? No, that's a sign of design. Because they are formed in a certain shape, and especially two or three of them, and you know that wasn't by accident. That was by design. We don't question that. We know. Likewise, if I go out in my garden and I dig up this object, I know that that was, I don't say, well, I wonder if that happened by accident. All those pieces got together, the particular metals in the form it is, and if this is just an accident. Are we going to debate that issue? Nonsense. We don't even think about it. We know that design indicates that it came from, or the complexity indicates it came from intelligence, came from design. If I go out here and I pick a leaf off of a tree, and I examine that under a microscope or whatever, I don't question whether that is... why should I then question whether that is by accident or design? One cell on that leaf is more complex than anything that man can reproduce. Man can only bring life from life. He cannot create one single cell of this. Even today, with all our scientific knowledge, not one cell can be created. We can only reproduce it from the original type of thing. Even if they could, it would not. Even if they could reproduce a cell, maybe make a cell, create a cell, what would it prove? Would that prove that it was all done by accident? Or would that simply show that by design, people can bring about, put together the atoms in a form and create a cell? Wouldn't prove accident. Even if they could, it would not prove that life spontaneously generated and has evolved all living things from a simple, from a single primary form by blind chance. It would only show that the truth that man was created in the image of God, and therefore because he's in God's image, he can do some things that God at least has allowed him to do, to create perhaps a living thing. It's never been done, but they would like to do it. So why should I then say, well, that just happened by accident? I'm sorry, but I'm not that gullible. To me, that takes more faith, gullibility I call it, to believe than if I accepted the fact that God designed it. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. You know, man can't even take an egg that has been broken and really put it back together the way it was. With all of our intelligence, all of our design, we can't really reproduce what's in nature. Blind chance is not productive of major complexity. How long would it take 100 monkeys on typewriters to write the Encyclopedia Britannica? just pecking away, banging away on typewriters or a computer today. How long would it take? It's absurd. It would never happen. And so, why should I believe that things just fall in this way and that way and getting together at certain times and then falling apart? That ultimately produced you. Or me. I mean, what? We're designed. We're wonderfully made. The probability difference here is between intelligent design and blind chance. Which is the more likely to create something complex, bring about humans? Is this a sound basis for belief? Now think about it. They will say, in an infinite amount of the most remote possibility, in an infinite amount of time, the most remote possibility becomes probable. That's what is responding. If it is remotely possible, no matter how remote it is, if the time is infinite, then it becomes probable. Well, there's a little problem with that to start off with. I can't operate on the basis of remote possibility. And neither can you. And we can't be sure that there was an infinite amount of time, and that in that infinite amount of time, it happened. We're here. This is absurd to try to argue that, well, it must have happened because we have a huge amount of time. The time itself won't fit, actually, the probabilities, but it's all assumption. It's merely somebody's way of getting around the problem that he has to face. It isn't probable. It isn't likely. The evidence does not support the claim. Jeremiah 32:17 says, Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and the earth by thy great power and stretch out arm, and there is nothing too hard for thee. God said it, and I believe it. Dr. Werner von Braun, who was the head of making the atom bomb, said, One cannot be exposed to the law and order of the universe without concluding that there must be design and purpose behind it all. Look at the evolutionary model. Think about it. A functioning organism must exist first. It must survive in order to be the fittest, or the fittest must survive in order for their model to work. It must change, that is, evolve or mutate, according to their thinking. It must reproduce, because if it doesn't reproduce, then there is no process of evolving. There must be a need, some pressure, stress, or opportunity, which through this process they call natural selection. Things happen, opportunity is there, or the need is there for survival of something better, and the mutations take place, and some of those are pretty good, and they're preserved. This is all a theoretical concept. Not actually happen by natural processes that we have been able to observe. The key difference between mega and microevolution is random chance versus intelligent design. And I want you to understand what I'm saying. I don't question the fact that there is that God has provided in his creation the capacity of life to adjust in order to be survivable. He didn't make it so rigid that if it cracked, it would be gone. He does allow adaptability within the genetic pool, and it appears that there certainly are some breakdowns in what they call mutations, whether some of these are productive of successful reproduction is questionable, but regardless of how we look at it, the question isn't whether God's creation can survive and can modify in order to survive. The question is whether it is done by random chance alone, that the original creation was by random chance, or intelligent design. Did God design it so it would be able to do this? Or was it merely some accident that it was able to do this over huge amounts of time, infinite amounts of time? The Creator's textbook. You know, we've got the evolutionist textbook. And the evolutionist textbook tells us how it took place. Well, these fellows, though, are wandering around trying to figure it out, what took place. Well, God wrote a book, and he said how it took place. I believe that God is right. It's better to go to the one who made the thing and wrote the book on it than to go to somebody who is trying to figure it out. Which is the better way? Which is the logical way? Genesis 1:12 says, "And the earth brought forth grass, an herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself, after his kind. And God saw that it was good." I want you to notice that word kind there, because it represents what God created. Now within the kinds, there could be modifications, like in creation you see that there are modifications, that things change within the kind. And of course, we're not talking about species. That's an arbitrary term used by people today to describe certain amounts of change that they see in various things. I'm talking about the kind that God said in his book. In Genesis 1:21 it says, "And God created great whales and every living creature that moves upon the waters, brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind, and God saw that it was good." In Genesis 1:24 and 25 it says, "And God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creatures after his kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. God saw that it was good." Question: do these changes produce entirely new kinds, or just variations within the kinds that God created? And that's the real issue. A lot of times we don't realize what is involved in these things. But there's change within the kind. But we don't have evidence that actually something of one kind really became something of another kind. That's a theory. For example, there are many types of dogs and many types of cats. You know, the dog family has many, many different types of dogs. And the cat family. But did dogs produce cats at some point? Or some other previous kind, some other previous animal produced those two? Variations, either from the genetic pool or mutations, does not prove that all evolved from the same source. Fact, they weren't there. They're probing and trying to figure it out, and they put out these theories. I'm not saying they're all wrong and everything. I'm just saying that what they have claimed, that there is no God and that all of these things just happened by blind chance, is not supported by the evidence. Think, would God have created with no capacity to adapt to survive. So the fact of adaptation, of change, does not prove that God does not exist, and that it all happened by accident. Insurmountable obstacles to gradualism. Now, they say, you know, it's a gradual process over billions of years. Well, I'm here to say that there are some huge obstacles that have never begun to be touched on. Let's consider the nursing capacity of mammals. It's a huge obstacle. Stop and think about it. The unborn calf has to be born, and then it has to suckle from its mother. How would the calf survive without those mammary glands for the centuries that it took for them to develop? What did they survive on? And if they survive, why did they need the mammary gland anyway? The way that evolution functions doesn't allow for this. It doesn't provide an answer, any kind of an explanation. The animal, the gland has to be provided, and so that the animal can suckle. So the animal is born with the desire to suckle, and the means of suckling, of getting the milk, is there, ready to go. Accident? Gradualism? By what means do these things take place? No answer. They have none. We are told that these are just evolved from sweat glands. Sweat glands? Let me ask you this question. How is it that this calf survived while sucking on the sweat glands that hadn't yet produced anything specific to suck on? How did they choose that particular location and get some sweat so they were able to survive until finally these became capable of producing the milk that they needed to survive on? Long silence. No answer. No explanation. There's a huge number of these kinds of problems in their theory. But let's go on. By what conceivable mechanism would this be possible? Let's take a look at something else that flies around from time to time and kind of neat to look at. And has many other, there are many other kinds of things similar. Pupating insects. The metamorphosis from a larva into an adult of the monarch butterfly is an incredible feature, you know, illustration of design. A female monarch butterfly lays an egg on the underside of a milkweed. She doesn't use anything else. Eggs hatch, depending on temperature, in 3 to 12 days. The larva feeds on the plant leaves for about 2 weeks and develop into caterpillars about 2 inches long. The caterpillars then attach themselves head down to a convenient twig. They shed their outer skin and begin transforming into a pupa or chrysalis, a process which is completed in a matter of hours. The butterfly emerges, inflates its wings with a pool of blood it has stored in its abdomen, expels any excess fluid, and rests. Then it waits until its wings stiffen and dry and flies away to start the cycle of life all over again. Think about that. Oh, it just evolved. How? how was it that the animal lays eggs? That we can kind of, well, yeah, okay, the laying of eggs is fine. The eggs hatch, and they become worms. The worm eats, and finally weaves a little thing to hang on to, and then just kind of waits for a while, hanging there, and finally emerges as a flying insect. Tell me, how is it possible for that to happen without somebody designing it, making it happen? Intelligent design. It's incredible to think that what process would one use, or would could it be possibly used to gradually reproduce first a worm, and then have that worm, what did it do? Go flying across the place, until finally it developed wings? If it did, why does it put it in a chrysalis form? How did it do that? It's an incredible thing if they just simply have no even suggestion for an answer. It's easy to make speculation for ignorant people. But the fact is that there is no intelligent process by which this can be understood. It goes through the process several times as it travels to a specific area in the south, mostly in Mexico, and then returns to Canada. Now, how does it do this? It goes through this over and over, and it's about four generations or so from the place that it began by the time it returns. How do these things know, even though they've never been there, where to go back to? Think about that. Something put it in the genetic code. Something caused it. And that tells me design, not accident. 1 Corinthians 1:19 through 22 says, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and I will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For after that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. Man has his devices, but the day will come when they will find out about God. Are they ready? We rely upon faith, yes. They accuse us of that. That's right. I believe in faith. Hebrews 11:3 says, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God. In other words, we go back to God who wrote the book, who did create a thing and wrote the book to know what took place, so that the things which are seen were not made of the things which appear. That's what we understand. The atoms are not, we can't see, they do not appear. And we understand, way back there in the Bible it wrote about this, that the things that are made are not made of things that appear. You know, there's so many things in the scriptures, in the Bible. He hangs the world upon nothing. Said that long time before they came to realize that. It says he sits on the circle of the earth. You know, the idea that the Bible is an out-of-date book, it's way ahead is the problem. They're still trying to catch up. We rely on the Creator who told the truth in his book. Evolutionists also rely on faith. They like to say, well, we don't rely on faith. Bunk. They rely upon books written by people who weren't there, groping blindly to learn what took place, often liberally using imagination to make things fit their preconceptions. That's a fact. They don't check all these things out. There's a huge amount of supposition and theory that goes into these things. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of outright fraud in their books. Have you ever heard about the Piltdown hoax? And many others, likewise. The idea that evolutionists are just honest, believing people who really are honest about everything they do, is itself a hoax. They are people. And people make things fit what they want so many times. I don't mean they're all liars or that they're all mistaken. I'm just saying that the idea that a lot of people have that these people are totally reliable and no matter what they say, it's right, is nonsense. Gullibility is their greatest advantage. People, they use the courts to try to force people to be taught evolution, to tax us and use the money to teach our children that there wasn't any God, that it just came by accident. And they set the parameters that say you can't be in our group unless you believe this. And then they say, well, look, all of our group believes it. There's been a lot of fraud. Just looking at the thing that has been set up for man in his supposed evolution, huge amounts of imagination involved. Many of these that were in there have been thrown out, and others have been used to try to replace them. But they still keep the model. Many of the errors. Think, what could we make by lining up the bones of all the people in the world today? If you just stop and think, okay, now what they've done is they find a bone in China, and they find another bone over here in maybe on this continent or someplace in Europe. And they put these bones, they finally decide, well, this looked like this and that looked like that. You know, it's like finding a doorknob someplace and deciding what kind of a house it came from, what it looked like. And they take these pieces and they arbitrarily put them together the way they think it ought to exist. And then they put them in an order which supposedly represents the evolutionary process. Huge amount of imagination. How do you know how much hair is on the face of an animal? I mean, of a person. I mean, even today, some people have lots of hair and some have none. You just take a little bit of common sense in some of these things. If you took all the people of the world today and you put them the way you wanted them in an order, what could you make out of that? Well, that's what they're doing with all these things, with the things they're finding here and there, and only scraps and pieces of that, and they're going to decide what we how we evolve. You can make anything out of it that way. It's hugely arbitrary. 1 Corinthians 1:25 says, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. And in 27-29 says, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world, and the things which are despised, has God chosen, yea, and the things which are not, to bring to naught the things that are. God determined that he wasn't going to allow man, in all his braggadocious, egotistical attitude, to shut him out and get away with it. God determined. Okay. You guys like to speculate. You go right on with your little game in the sandbox. But I'm in charge. And someday, they're going to be there before him, and they're going to find out what really took place. That no flesh should glory in his presence. Nobody's going to stand before God and say, well, I know what took place, and this is the way it was. And I'm going to have things my way around here. Yes, I believe. I believe that the Bible tells it more sensibly. It makes a lot more sense than all these speculations and claims and false distortions of the way things really took place. I believe. And I believe because of the complexity and the complexity of things that could not have happened by accident. I don't believe that things just automatically happen over a period of time and any kind of thing can take place. Yes, I see. This morning as we stand and sing our song of invitation, our song of closing, we're going to sing about I Believe. I believe my Savior died on Calvary's tree for you and me. I believe that somewhere in the darkest night, he hears my plea. I believe that everyone who goes astray, my Lord will come to show the way. I believe, yes, I believe. Be standing.
Somewhere is heaven.